It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
And welcome to Asher Line. That's presented by Carbide Brewing Company. We're at Plucker's Wing Bar. I'm Steve Sparks along with Jeff Blum, the analyst. Get to do the show today. Good to have you with us, Jeff. Yep.
They handed over the reins to the inmates.
To a couple of amateurs.
In every sense of the word.
All right, got a little news with the Astros. Yesterday they made a signing, and we're talking about another relief pitcher. So back-to-back weeks coming on to Asher Line. Ryan Stanek last week.
Yep.
This week it's Pedro Baez, veteran pitcher, last seven seasons with the Los Angeles Dodgers. What'd you think about that pickup?
I thought it was good. I think still, you know, for me, I still feel like, you know, with Osuna going on the shelf with his elbow injury, that opens up that closing role. There might be some questions around Ryan Presley, who's a very good setup guy. Would he be able to close? And I think there's still concern about how these games are going to end. But I do believe that the depth in Stanek is good. He's also been an opener, but he's also got jet fuel on that right arm. Mm-hmm. But Pedro Baez, for me, is a guy who, you know, playing with the championship team with the Dodgers over the last 3 or 4 years, and I think he's got a career 3.06 ERA, which is highly appealing.
Yeah.
Everything about him says that he is going to be a guy that's going to match up nicely and allow Dusty Baker and Brent Strom to be able to pick guys in lineups and have him go out there and attack them pretty good.
I think everybody's starting to look at the numbers, and now with the three-batter minimum rule, you're looking for pitchers who can get righties and lefties out, and Baez falls into that camp.
He does, and go ahead and get you some popcorn and something to drink, too, because if he takes the bump, you got some time to watch some baseball. This guy is notoriously one of the slowest workers. I know that's
probably not one of the better selling points,
but in our heads, I know you've thought about it, too. I got to save up some stories for when that guy is pitching.
Yeah.
But every time he goes out there, it may be methodical. It may take a little while, but he gets the job done. And I agree with you that with the three-batter rule, he's one of those guys that it's appealing on both sides of the plate.
That's it. I mean, we're looking at this team right now, and I think about Ryan Presley. You know, it's probably out of turn for me to offer this opinion, but I don't think he was completely healthy last year.
I agree.
He had had the knee injuries, and he just didn't look it looked like his fastball was a tiny bit short, and his breaking ball was breaking a little bit earlier than usual.
Yeah.
When he's rolling at the top of his game, it was rolling a little bit more. And every once in a while, we would see that sudden break on his curve and his slider.
But I felt like you did, maybe after like 2 or 3 days off, when he came back, that first appearance back after getting a couple of days break, that's when that snap was on there.
Was
and then
back
you go back
alive.
To back days.
Yeah.
It just wasn't there. He wasn't rebounding as quickly as he wanted.
Yeah. And I say that in the sense that I think Ryan Presley is certainly capable of being your ninth inning pitcher. I think he's got the mental capacity, you know, whatever
stuff
it takes. And we're going to talk with one of the all-time best closers during this Astro line, but it's not always easy to go out there in the ninth inning. We've seen it time and time again where guys are great in the seventh inning, guys are great in the eighth inning, but when you put them in the ninth inning, there's no safety net.
Yeah, and that's where the conversation with Billy Wagner got kind of fun.
Yeah.
Because, you know, the mentality of that closer, and he willingly just opened up and said, you know, this is how I felt every time I went out there. And I felt that as a player playing behind Billy Wagner. When he came into the game, I played with some very good closers. I got to play with Trevor Hoffman.
Wow.
There were only a couple of guys where they came in and you went, all right,
we're done.
This is it.
Yeah.
And it felt much like the 2017 season when you had the seventh, eighth, and ninth were locked up and the game was over.
Yeah.
And that feeling doesn't happen very often, but it was nice to hear Billy actually open up and talk about it at looking back on his career.
Well, general manager James Click starting to make his mark. And one of the things that I think the beat writers for the Astros have picked up on is something that he said is he's looking for some pitchers that can get the big outs.
Yeah.
And now with Stanek, who can go out there for 3 or 4 hitters and get big outs in the seventh, eighth inning, I think you can say the same thing about somebody with as much experience as Pedro Baez has. Presley obviously is going to get a lot of big outs. And then you throw those guys into the mix. Joe Smith, hopefully, fingers crossed, man. You get him to get a lot of those big outs. Then you can sprinkle in all those, the Andre Scrubs and the Brooks Raleys and the Blake
I completely Taylor's agree all those on guys. That because I think you've got to protect some of those young kids.
Yeah.
Last year was a unique year just in the sense that they played without stands, you know, or fans in the stands, so there was a little bit less pressure in that sense. But, again, they didn't know what was going on.
Right.
You know, they had a chance to feel for it. I think Dusty did a good job by of finding out who could play a role down the stretch later in the season, and that's why they were successful in the playoffs. But anytime you have really good young talent like the guys you're talking about, you sprinkle in that veteran who can sit out there, have the conversation, and explain how to get through some of those tougher situations is only going to enhance some of those good arms they already have.
Steve Sparks and Jeff Blum here. How many more pitchers do you think James Click needs to go after?
If there's somebody who has closing experience, I think he's got to take a look at him. I would like to say two more because I'd love to have that closer. That back end of the bullpen guy, and then I would like to see maybe if you could find that 3-4 starter to mix in there just in case to give a little more protection, a little more depth in that rotation. That would be nice for me.
Okay, what about outfield? So we're starting to hear some rumors now. You're hearing those. You're reading these. Where some other teams are starting to shop guys. You never know.
It's crazy.
Where teams are financially and who they'll shop
just to
keep their...
Or how they project and, you know, minor league systems and who they value and would be willing to move.
I say that because Andrew Benintendi's name has come up.
I'll tell you what. If a left-handed bat who puts together an incredible at-bat and may...
Sounds like Michael Brantley.
Well, that's what I was just going to say. And he might actually have more power than a guy like Michael Brantley. He might be able to sneak a couple more out of the ballpark for you and provide a little more thump in that lineup if you can get a guy like Andrew Benintendi. We know he can play some defense, and he's played a unique left field in Boston. He played a great left field in the ALCS in 2018 with the Boston Red Sox. Yeah. So we know the defense prowess is theirs, and the at-bats, he'd fit right in.
Yeah, you know, and you're looking for maybe one or two guys to fit into this lineup. Then you're still looking at a top five offensive team, I think. I think a lot of teams are going to sleep on this Astros team.
Good.
Yeah.
Because these guys are going to come out and just rake.
Yeah.
And you forget Yordan Alvarez.
Of course.
I cannot wait to see what that guy can do healthy throughout the course of the season.
Yeah.
You know, talking to Jeff Bagwell, we're both pretty excited about a guy like Yordan. If he's healthy, he might be able to sneak 40 home runs out of the ballpark throughout the course of a season. Wouldn't that be a nice piece to have in the middle of your lineup?
That would be sneaky. All right, we got a great show. The 2021 season is fast approaching, and the excitement is building. Make sure you have a seat in the game with a 28-game plan. Whether you want to see every series or be here every weekend, we have the perfect plan for you. Visit Astros.com/ticket plans or call 1-877-9-ASTROS to learn more. Coming up, two segments with Billy Wagner, one of the best closers of all time. That's back with more on Astroline right after this.
Baseball season, it comes and goes. But Crawford Bock just flows and flows. It's the Bock to drink any time of year. You don't need a reason because it's a dang good beer. You can rock the Bock at a music festival or rodeo, Shakespeare in the Park or Lowrider Car Show. It's the Bock for bonfires and happy hour, South Padre, even your next baby shower. So share a Crawford Bock anytime with your favorite gals and bros. And when baseball season comes back, let's go Stros!
Discover the Palm Beaches. Experience legendary hospitality in Florida's Gulf capital with special rates at the area's best resorts. Miles of uncrowded beaches stretch from Jupiter to Boca Raton. Small cities and beach towns are waiting for you to explore. More than 160 sun-soaked golf courses are inviting you to play. Start planning your next trip at thepalmbeaches.com.
We are back. I am Jeff Blum, and I'm joined with Steve Sparks here at Pluckers, and this is Astro Line brought to you by Carbach Brewing. Join the Astros Virtual Buddies Club today. For $25, we will ship a Buddies backpack, socks, hat, and lanyard right to your door. Virtual Buddies will also have the opportunity to be selected for exclusive virtual experiences that are continuing through the offseason. Visit Astros.com/buddies for more information.
Yeah, Billy Wagner, future Hall of Famer. And Billy, I got to ask you this. You're turning 50 in July and you're still coaching. I imagine you're throwing about an hour's worth of batting practice every single day. Am I right?
I'm going to be honest with you. I have splurged and got a few machines since getting close to that 50. So, so I have a lot. I have more coaches, and I start to kind of delegate a little bit more. But I still do my fair share of throwing, and that's about the only thing that doesn't hurt. It's throwing. Yeah. I feel I can throw forever. It's everything else hurts.
We'll talk a little bit about your professional career in a little bit, but I'm always curious. You know, you coaching some of these high school kids and being around the club aspect of baseball these days, which has changed completely for all three of us. You know, it's a completely different animal. But you were a guy that could throw 100 miles an hour. How many of your players, or even players on other teams who know who you are, approach you and say, "Billy, how do I throw 100 miles an hour?" Mm.
Less than you'd think.
Really?
Yeah. And most kids have gurus. Most kids have gurus nowadays.
That great name.
They will. And you know, I think a lot of that's because when you have a guru, you pay him. And what's that guy going to say? So he's not going to tell you anything you don't want to hear. Coach Wagner will. And so they don't, and you know me, I'm pretty straight. And, you know, I try to be, you know, I'm not going to crush a kid's dreams or anything, but the kids, you know, I'm going to say, "Hey, things have got, you know, these are things that, you know, I did." But I mean, you know, as you know, being in a locker room, you're with a bunch of freaks. And I mean, you don't know why they're able to do the things they're doing. I don't know why I'm 5'10 and can throw as hard as I could, but I mean, this is what I did. And so, you know, when you talk to Nolan or when you talk to some of these older players, they did things that none of us ever did. I mean, nobody did a heavy ball. Nobody did bands and all this. I mean, there's a 45-minute routine to these kids nowadays. And so they don't come up as much. They, you know, I think they're a little bit more impressed when I go out and throw BP and I'm throwing from the mound. And they're like, "Oh, God, wait a minute. Oh, yeah. Way better movement.
You still got that short arm action that just pumps it in there, huh?"
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah. And so, you know, they'll laugh because I'll come in and I'll put my cleats on. I'll go, "All right, guys, let's go. You got me today." And so, you know, and they're like, "What?" And, you know, it's not as hard as it used to be. But for about the first 4 or 5 years, I would tone it up and go, "Here we go." And I would gas them. Guys would just be, you know. And so the machine was a little bit more friendly for them and stuff. And so, but I mean, you know, playing long toss and watching these guys, they still get an idea of what I'm trying to teach and stuff. So, but it is. I mean, it has changed a lot for us, but in a lot of good ways.
Everything you've accomplished in the game, what motivated you to get back into coaching? I know your kids are probably part of it, but you're really in it and really encouraging these kids. What was it about the game and what is it about coaching that you love so much?
Well, I was blessed to have two coaches. I had a lot of coaches, but my high school coach, Luke Perry, was just a huge influence on me. And understanding that, you know, it's about the kid, not the wins and losses. My college coach, Abe Knapp, was a huge influence on just being a motivator and teaching kids how to play, you know, not with numbers, but to win the game. And so and going through pro baseball, it was, you know, you become very selfish. You forget how hard this game is a lot of times. And so once I got out, I said, you know what, I'm going to go back and I'm going to relax and I'm going to teach these kids. I just want these kids to have fun, but I want them to play with a passion and understand the game and, you know, not be so worried about wins and losses. The process of winning and losing will come with how you practice, how you go about your job and your accountability. And so just really preaching that and not really browbeating a kid over, you know, not getting a hit, or because I tell them, you're going to take bad swings, you're going to make bad pitches, you're going to make good pitches. All these things are going to happen, but, you know, compete. Learn how to compete and don't look back at numbers. Don't sit here and please don't come in and ask me what your pitch count is or what your spin rate or what my launch angle was on that. Just hey, if you got a hit, great. If you're on base, great. If you got that guy out and there's a line drive, great. I said, because at the end of the day, that's what matters and you're trying to win. And so, but the game in that aspect has changed too, because the colleges have put a lot of emphasis on size and maturity and IQ that some of these kids don't get because they're a little late bloomers. And so, you know, I try to take a little bit of that pressure off and just say, hey, oh, that'll take care of itself by just going out and competing. And, you know, and I enjoy the kids. I enjoy the relationships with the kids because there's so much more to being a high school coach than going out there and saying, hey, hold the ball this way, grip it that way. I mean, they have so much going on in their life with family, colleges, girlfriends, you name it. And having just a little bit of influence to kind of smooth out or have somebody just they can sound on and not, you know, not be judgmental on them. They feel better about that. And so I like that because my high school coach and college coach was really a lot like that for me. And so we've been very blessed to have a lot of great kids come in. And but it's been good to have that relationship.
Billy, why do you think baseball is the ultimate late bloomer sport?
It's not a size requirement. I mean, it's about production and competing. And I think when you go out there, there's been enough guys that show that you don't have to have a certain size. You have to have a certain grit about you to be able to compete. And competing, once again, isn't a size requirement. It's a heart requirement. And, you know, if you've got the requirement, if you can go out there and manage your emotions and compete and fight for that, you can play against these guys. I mean, you know, when you watch ESPN, all you see is these guys hitting home runs. You only see them hitting home runs, but then you look in the box scores and they were 1-for-4 with 3 punch outs, but they hit a home run. They don't see that. And so kids are like, oh, these guys are so great. I got to be this. And, you know, and it's just, it's really difficult to show these kids that. And I tell these kids, I will never be the guy that goes, you'll never play pro baseball. Cause I said, I was very fortunate. My coaches were very positive with me, but there were people around sitting there going, you can't do this. You're not going to do that. You're too little. I mean, there was a scout for the Astros. And I mean, and I guess Stromy might know him. His name was Paul Weaver. I was in Salt Lake City and he was behind me and he reached over my shoulder and goes, hey, I just want to let you know that I didn't want to draft you. You're too small. You're not going to be durable. And I said, well, I appreciate that. Thanks. And that was a positive for me because that was just motivation. But, you know, most kids today, they can't handle that. And so, you know, I got, you know, those are things, these kids today need motivation. They need the encouragement, but they need grit. And, you know, and I like being that guy.
What was high school coaching like this year with the pandemic? What did you have to change? It had to be brutal.
Spray bottles and masks and foggers. And I mean,
10 jobs, right?
Well, everything. I mean, you're cleaning before they get there. You're making sure masks are on. You're cleaning after they leave. It's just hand sanitizers. We're a small private school, but I've taken on that extra, like, hey, I'm the grounds crew. And now we have a turf field, which helps a ton. But, you know, I'm the cleanup crew. I'm the concession guy. So all these things I try to, you know, the music and the lights and all. So we're doing all that. But, you know, it's just, you know, it adds a little bit more time. But, I mean, it's what it takes to be able to have what you want to be able to do. And I'm no guru in baseball, but I love being around baseball. And so I'll do whatever I need to do to be able to have these kids on the field playing and enjoying themselves.
Billy, when you were playing in high school and going through the collegiate levels, when did you actually realize that you had that kind of velocity in your left arm?
I wasn't very good at knowing who I was. I you know, of course you have people say, hey, you throw hard and you do this. I had strikeouts, but you know, you always had, I'm left-handed. I was effectively wild. I really didn't know what I was doing. I don't know if I ever thought I was good enough. I think that was one of the things that kind of drove me
motivation.
I know what numbers say and I know what things, but you know, there's a point where numbers become a target. And so and a bullseye on you. And so, you know, I never thought about how hard I threw. Everybody else would like to tell me. I mean, you of all people know that throwing hard, it still travels a long way. I mean, you took me deep. I mean, David Eckstein took me deep. I mean, it was really, for me, I was never comfortable in my own skin with that because it only takes one reporter to go, hey, you're a thrower. And all of a sudden you go, how about crush your dreams real quick? Those were the things that really hard. I mean, and I had those guys because I was a pitcher in 2010. I was a thrower in 95, 96. And, you know, until I realized that, you know, you can't throw Vinny Castillo straight fastballs the whole time. It just doesn't work.
No, you can't. No, he can hit the cheese. A lot of guys get to the big leagues and the ability to be able to hit the cheese. But you actually, you know, you spent your career as a closer, but you also talked a little bit about being a starter and then moving to the closer. You know, what made that decision for you? Was it the velocity or was it just the ability to get the swing and miss? Because your swing and miss numbers that we'll talk about in a little bit are off the charts in comparison to guys who are in the Hall of Fame.
When I was starting, you know, I didn't like starting because I had one day. I liked the day I started, and that was it. But I didn't have this huge mixture of pitches. It was fastball. And, I mean, Jerry Goff was my – and Stromy were my manager, and Jerry Goff was my catcher. And they would tell me, okay, you got to throw 10% changeups in, you know, in your starts. And, I mean, me and Jerry would throw 10 changeups in the first inning. All right, we're good. Here
we go. Get them out of the way.
Yeah, but it was, you know, let's do what I do and best. And at that time, you know, there wasn't a lot of guys throwing hard. I mean, there was hard guys, but then there wasn't guys throwing 100 miles an hour. There wasn't lefties that were, you know, 5'10" throwing hard uphill. Those were different things that people hadn't seen. And I learned more about my control and ability as I started through the minor leagues, but Getting the opportunity to close was probably the best thing. I mean, and Larry Durker was a huge influence on that because I was I went to Puerto Rico to work on starting in 96, and he ends up taking over in that 97. And he comes down and, you know, he's got a big cigar and he's sitting there with Matt Galani, and he's asking me what I want to do. Would you want to close or would you want to start? And I'm like, I want to close. He goes, all right, that sounds good. You and Hudak will be co-closers. So, I mean, it's pretty tech. That was how it was. And so it kind of worked out. Hootie was pitching well. I think he got hurt and then it just kind of fell on me a little bit. But I mean, I enjoyed having to be ready every day. It was, you know, as I got older, it got more stressful, and it was just that constant preparation. I enjoyed that. But I liked closing way better than starting.
All right, we're talking with Billy Wagner. He's a high school coach, maybe a future Hall of Famer. We'll talk a little bit about the Hall of Fame votes when we come back on Astroline right after this.
Baseball season, it comes and goes. But Crawford Bock just flows and flows. It's the Bock to drink any time of year. You don't need a reason because it's a dang good beer. You can rock the Bock at a music festival or rodeo, Shakespeare in the Park or Lowrider Car Show. It's the Bock for bonfires and happy hour, South Padre, even your next baby shower. So share a Crawford Bock anytime with your favorite gals and bros. And when baseball season comes back, let's go Stros!
Discover the Palm Beaches. Experience legendary hospitality in Florida's Gulf capital with special rates at the area's best resorts. Miles of uncrowded beaches stretch from Jupiter to Boca Raton. Small cities and beach towns are waiting for you to explore. More than 160 sun-soaked golf courses are inviting you to play. Start planning your next trip at thepalmbeaches.com.
And welcome back to Astroline. It's brought to you by, of course, Carbach Brewing Company. We're at Plucker's Wing Bar on 1400 North Shepherd. Get ready for 2021 by checking out the Astros team store at Union Station. Stop by Monday through Saturday for the latest Astros merchandise or call in an order for stadium side pickup. Visit astros.com/team store for more information. A little bit more with Billy Wagner coming up. And Blummer, you had the first question.
We love Billy Wagner. Billy, there is a rise in votes and you're trending the right way. What would the Hall of Fame induction mean to you?
I think it's hard to put into words because it's just something I think every player wants. I mean, there's no doubt when you watch the Hall of Fame inductions and you see the guys up there, I mean, everybody's practiced that induction speech. Oh, yeah. I've practiced that thing a million times. Just what's that sound like? What would that feel like? Because you know what? Whatever I practice ain't going to come out when I get on there. I'm going to be a ball of tears and emotion. So it's – but, to be able to sit there and look around and go, you know, there's Barry Larkin, there's Nolan Ryan, there's Sandy Koufax. These guys that have been there, I think that is.
It's hard to fathom, isn't it?
You know, when you've come from welfare to middle class to
humble,
you know,
beginnings, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, those aren't things you think about. And then when I grew up, I mean, every guy that was on TV, they were millionaires. They had to have silver spoons. It was just. Until right. You realize and mature that, you know, getting that break and doing something with that that moment. You know, that was, I think, you know, getting 300 saves was like, if you get 300 saves, hey, there's a real shot here. You know, 400, you should have no problem. And then, you know, then you get that. And then the real hard part comes, because now, you know, that the numbers aren't the issue for why things are what they are. I mean, so, you know, everything's politically correct. And unfortunately, I'm not a politically correct person.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of that's timing too, right?
Well, yeah, Mo and Trevor screwed it up for everybody.
Right, exactly.
They would not retire and quit or lose. They killed it for everybody. Yeah. So, but I mean, you know, it's been a blast.
You idolize Nolan Ryan, and I would imagine the first time you got a chance to meet him, one of the things that probably endeared you to Nolan was how humble he was because of your personality. Is that right?
Well, he made his debut in pro ball in my hometown.
Really? I mean,
Marion, Virginia. Yeah, my dad saw him. It was crazy. And it was funny because the very first time I met Nolan, he's in there with Dennis Laborio in the locker room, and Dennis calls me in, and I'm just a wreck. And so I'm talking to him, and I go, you know, I'm talking. I go, yeah, Nolan, you made your debut in my hometown, Marion, Virginia. He goes, yeah, I didn't like that place. thanks. So yeah, and that was me. But I mean, over the years, I got to spend more time. And I remember, it was 96 or 97. I went through like a 6 week. Just I stunk. I don't know what it was. Couldn't get anybody out. Good, bad, didn't matter. And so Durker and all those guys, they go, hey, oh my God, we'll get him to Nolan. Nolan will fix him. He fixed Randy Johnson. So sure enough, I get a phone call from Nolan. And you getting a phone call from Nolan is like, you know, hey, this is Nolan Ryan. Like, and then when you walk up to him, hey, I'm Nolan Ryan. Like that, he's sitting there like, okay. And so, and I'm like, I'm William Edward Wagner. That's who I feel like I need to tell you who I am and what's my date. But I go out and he goes, I'd like you to come out to Alvin, Texas, and I'm going to look at you and watch you throw and whatever. So we're still there in the season. It's like 10 o'clock in the morning. I come out and I got Donnie Wall. Donnie Wall is going to catch me. I think he's with me and we weren't sure if there's going to be a catcher. So he comes in. Sure enough, I'm playing catch. I'm playing catch with Nolan. Nolan said, so I'm throwing with Nolan. And I'm sitting here the whole time. Oh my God, that's Nolan Ryan. Oh my God. No, heck no. I mean, that was traumatic enough. And so he goes, all right, get up on the mound, see what you got. And I mean, it never took me long to get loose anyway, but I was throwing rockets. That's the first time I was like, oh my God, I've got good stuff at 10 o'clock. And so, he looks at me and I mean, literally I throw him 10 pitches. And he goes, oh hell kid, you're good. And that was all he said. So I go back to the
pitch. That was it.
Astrodome. What's that?
That was it.
That was it. And he goes,
thanks for coming.
So he calls Durker and goes, oh, he's good. And so of course they put me in that night. I think I give up a run. You know, I punch out three, I give up a run, but they're like, oh, he's back and stuff. And it was sort of like when it was funny because it's sort of like when Randy Johnson came in and I came back and they're like, oh, you need to talk to Randy about his slider. I go up and I go, hey, Randy, hey, you know, hey, show me how you drip. Can you help me work on this? And he goes, I hold it like this. All right. Okay, good. Good talk. Yeah, got it. And I think 99, I end up having this really good year. Breaking balls real good. All of a sudden, Randy Johnson's like, yeah, I worked with him. And I'm like,
what? Showed him my slider.
I'm like, are you kidding me?
He owes everything to me.
Randy Johnson's over here trying to go, yeah, we worked on that. And I'm like, dude, your back was hurt. You're laying in the dang. I mean, he was laying down. He couldn't throw all the time. His back was hurt. Go out, pitch eight innings, punch out 20. Ugh, I can't finish that last one. My back's hurt. Get him wags. That's what I told him. I was like, what? You know, paid all this money. But it was funny. But I mean, but really, Nolan was just, I mean, even I think 2 years ago when I came in and I threw out the first pitch and I walk in and, you know, it's something to see Baggy and Biz. I mean, they're still those iconic figures, but I walk in and there's Nolan. And I've met Nolan 100 times. Hey, Nolan Ryan. Yes, you are. Yes, you are. I mean, he's just such an awesome person, though. He never asked me about – he never asked me silly stuff. It's like, hey, you gang, how's them cows doing? You know, it's always about farmer. Well, So it's great. So it's he puts you at ease a little bit more now.
Yeah, nothing like a couple of ball players talking about beef before baseball. But, hey, I get traded over in 2002, and I become a part of the Astros, and I'm playing third base – and I'm getting to realize what Houston summers are like, 105 humidity, sweating bullets. And I want to know something. When you came into games, I'd be standing at third base, and all of a sudden I would feel this whoosh on the right-hand side of me when we were playing at Minute Maid Park. And it was every ounce of humidity outside the stadium that just came rushing in and took me out as you came into games. Did you have any control over that, or is that something you wanted?
No, nobody.
Good
wants
Lord,
that.
That's good to know, because for the entire time we played together, I blamed you for that.
Well, good. You know what? Because I was sitting there and I was like, "Who?" And I remember talking to Drayton about that, and Drayton goes, "Well, I promised the city of Houston we were going to have outdoor baseball." I'm like, "Holy!" I said, "All righty." I went from 5'10" each game. I'm back to 5'8".
I was going to say, you pitched one inning and you lost the most weight of anybody on the team.
I remember just being drenched and just feel like I'd done. And Baggy and them were looking at me like, I've just played nine innings, 162 games, nine innings, and I'm great. And I'm like, good. I'm pouring sweat. I don't know why they did that, but that's what Drayton always told me. Well, I promised them outdoor baseball.
Well, that's good. We can be friends again. I just started cracking me up. I'm like, why is Billy asking for the roof to be open, man? Is the ball not travel as well, or what's going on?
Oh, yeah. The balls have been hit off me. They travel well.
Shut up, dude. A few of them did. Who did you hate facing? Was Piazza one of the worst?
No. Well, I'll be honest with you. It's like Osmus, Eckstein, like guys that, if you made a mistake, they could do some damage. But, I mean, they were 8-9, fell off, battled again. All of a sudden, base hit, you're out there going, holy cow. Now that guy comes back around, and you've done 25 pitches, and you're – starting to feel it in 105 degree, 200 degree humidity. Mm-hmm. Like, oh my God. But that those were the guys. Miguel Oliva wore me out. Oh my God. He would wear me. These guys would wear me out. But,
so fun.
I know some of the bigger guys like Mac and Barry.
And Sosa a lot.
Those guys, those two got me, but 1-for-5. So I was never like, here we go. I mean, it was – I enjoyed that because it was really a win-win for me. I mean, I remember coming in one time and Reggie Jackson asked me, he goes – he came in the dugout and he saw me. He goes, hey, Wax. And I go, hey, Reggie Jackson, oh, my God. And he goes – he did this one time. I said, one time? He goes, I'd like to face you one time. And he goes, now, you'd probably strike me out 9 out of 10 times, because one time. I'm like, let's do it. Let's go. But I mean, it was pretty cool. I mean, I like that guy. I like, hey, power on power. And I mean, when McGuire took me so deep, he almost took me out of Busch Stadium. I mean, it literally hit like the first or second row from going out. I come in and we just lost a game, and Biggio's going, oh my God, that's awesome. You're like, really? That's, I mean, and Bagwell's going, hey, let me forearm bash you. I'm like, what? What?
Those guys are special.
Oh, they are. And you're sitting there going, and so it was great when Kerry Woods like dominated them. I was like, Kerry was awesome. I'm getting a signed ball and I'm in the clubhouse. He was so awesome. That was so cool. And they're like so pissed. You've got the death stare from Bagwell, and you've got Biggio walking around like he's going to kill somebody. It was awesome. So I love being able to sit there and just give it right back to him.
Hey, I got one more question before I'm going to throw it to Sparky, but it was 2003 and we're in Yankee Stadium. Royo comes out of the game in the first inning, and we proceed to go through almost our entire bullpen to get to you to close out a game that we had in hand. And you close this game out on a ground ball to Baggy, and you're fist pumping, and Baggy's kind of looking at you like, what's wrong with this guy, man? We're a big deal, And tell me how that conversation went, because I tell the story all the time on air because it's so fascinating to people that some of us had no idea that no-hitter even happened until the end of the game.
But this doesn't get edited, right?
I had no idea.
No. I'm out there, and I mean, I am hyped out of my mind, and I am just pumping ground ball to Baggy. I'm blowing hamstrings out to get over. I get the ball and I'm like this. Baggy looks at me. He's like, I'm needed. I'm good. And I go, you dumbass. It's a no hitter. No hitter. And he's looking at me like, what? I was so bad. It was the biggest downer. I'm like, what? This is a no hitter in Yankee Stadium. It's never been done. It hadn't been done in 56 years. And
yeah,
it's so funny because that night they were telling us about all these stories about the ghosts in the outfield and stuff. And so I'm like, shoot. And so all of a sudden I'm out there. And I mean, Jimmy Williams is calling down, hey, you want this inning? I'm like, hell yeah. Well, I'm up before he's even calling. I'm like picking phone up. Yeah, I'm good. And so, you know, Dotel, Lidge, me, I mean, there was no doubt this was going to, we were going to have this opportunity. And so, but it was just so funny. I remember and Jeff Kent, you know, you've got these guys that are acting like, oh, it's no big deal. And it was such a killer. And then they come in and Barry Waters has got champagne. And everybody's like walking around like, what's the big deal here? And, you know, and it was so short lived because it was a night game. And of course, a 1 o'clock game. We have a 1 o'clock game. I don't think I got to bed till like 4. And I remember getting up, going to the, and I literally, we had an interview at like 9 o'clock. We're sitting here doing it. And everybody's pitched, and everybody had pitched that night had to come in the next day, except me. They wore it.
Everybody was available.
Everybody gave up a run. Everybody gave, it was like one of those things. And I was sitting out there just going, oh God, don't put me in.
Hey, I called Brent Strom, the Astros pitching coach, about an hour ago, and I said, hey, I'm going to talk to Billy. Give me a story. He goes, I'll tell you one. I'm not sure if Billy knows or not, but it was in 1995. He was your pitching coach in Tucson. Mm-hmm. And you were a starting pitcher. You mentioned that a while ago after you were drafted. And he said that team was going to the playoffs. He had to call the farm director to get more baseballs. Did you know about this?
Mm-hmm.
So he calls Fred Nelson, I believe it was, says, hey, we need some more baseballs for the playoffs. He goes, what? What are you talking about? We don't have that in the budget. Why don't you guys have baseballs? Are you giving away? He goes, no, the first rounder you sent me doesn't have a breaking ball. He can't put anybody away. And he's got 110 pitches through 4 1/3 every time he pitches. And they foul off every one of these pearls with new baseballs because of Billy Wagner.
Oh, without a doubt.
So the question is, when did you pick up the breaking ball? Because that was obviously the difference maker.
Well, I had a curveball. I just couldn't throw. I mean, I had a hammer curveball, but it was one of those you'd like throw it super hard, super short, and it's like, oh, I can't swing at it. I never got anybody to swing it. If I threw first strike, it was good. And so that was really, I mean, I went to the big leagues with one pitch and this sometime curveball. And Jerry Hunsinger is the one that said, listen, we're in Dodger Stadium. I give him a home run to Raul Mondesi on back-to-back-to-back curveballs.
Wow.
He comes in and Jerry is furious. He's right in my face and he's like, no more curveballs. You're throwing a slider. I go, I don't know how to throw a slider. You figure it out.
Really?
We're in the middle of the season. I'm like, okay. Mike Magnotti's who taught me how to throw a slider.
No kidding.
Mike Magnotti. And so I'm sitting here and I'm like, I'm looking around. Mags is sitting beside me going, he goes, well, I mean, it was just awful. And then kind of Lidge kind of helped me kind of get a little bit better, but it was, yes. I mean, when I was in college, I mean, it was not for me to throw 150 to 175 pitches a game. Absolutely not an issue, not a problem. I can definitely believe that without a doubt, because there was many a game where I'm like 8-9 pitches a batter.
You know, I think when you first broke into the big leagues, we can figure out who your mentors were because you had a lot of veterans, Dre Beck, Swindell, Danny Darwin, I think, Brocale, some of these guys. But once you got to the latter stages of your career, what were you telling guys? What were you teaching some of the guys to pitch in the ninth inning?
Don't forget about Xavier Hernandez.
Oh, yeah, Xavier
Hernandez was a huge influence on me. Mike Maddox was a huge influence on me. Because a lot of times a closer feels like he has to be 100% to be effective.
Hey, you know who else was on that team? Julian Morales' father-in-law, Terry Clark. Terry Clark was on that team.
Oh my gosh, TC.
Yep.
Holy cow.
Okay, so what did X teach you besides scuffing?
Accountability. Huge accountability. Okay. He was, I mean, when I took over as a closer, he said, I mean, he pulled me to the side and he goes, you know, these are the things I want you to do. Win, lose, or draw. You'll be at your locker. I'll have a towel, a water, and a beer for you. You'll answer your questions. And it'll be, if we win, it's us, team. If we lose, it's me and I. He goes, you always will say that. And so for the whole season, I come in, good, bad, whatever. He's sitting there, and he's like standing right there.
Wow.
Making sure I did what I did. And Danny Darwin, holy God, scariest man I've ever, gets brought to Houston. And the very first thing he tells me, he walks up on me. He's 110 years old.
Yeah.
Looks down on me and goes, you do your job and I'll do mine. And don't you worry about anything else. I'm like, yes, sir. I'm 25 years old looking at him, yes, sir. And he's 40. So I'm like, yes, sir. What I learned from them was just humility and taking the ball every day, good, bad, or whatever. You know, you were never going to feel 100%. And what made you as a character, what the character you wanted to show was, I'll take the ball. I'm going to go out there with 80% or 70% or whatever I got to do and compete. And you know, as a pitcher, you went out there so many times with your B and C stuff and, you know, found a way to get these people out. But I had Kimbrel and Johnny Venters, and it was easy to tell those guys, like, hey, right now it's going to be really easy. Nobody's seen you. Things are going to look really easy, but there's going to be a part, you know, in that fourth to fifth year where you're going to have to figure out who are you. You have to figure out the character and the, you know, that'll separate you. But these are the words, this game's hard. And you got to remember this game's hard.
Everybody goes through that, don't they?
And you know what? The good ones are the ones that make their way out the other side. Mm-hmm. And it's really the ones who sit there and figure out that, hey, I can do this. And you got to have a support group. And I've been blessed all my life with people like Mike Magnani, Donnie Wall, Jay Powell, Scott Ellerton, that were in that bullpen, would sit there and could talk. You could bounce Doug Henry, guys like that, that you could have Peter Moylan, Tim Worrell, Roberto Hernandez, Tom Gordon, Mike Williams. These guys were always around me to sit there and go, hey, I got you. I mean, there was teams when I was in Houston where we had Mike Williams, Flash Gordon, Lidge, Dotel, myself, Mike Jackson. I mean, there was a time we had six closers sitting in the bullpen, and you're sitting here looking around going, oh, I mean, how do you lose?
Yeah.
But they taught me some things of how to, you know, weather the storms and you know, not every time was, you know, there's some things I wish I could have taken back, but there's nothing I regret when I got on the field. If I regretted some of the things I said between the time I got traded in Houston to the time I was in Philly, I think those are the times that I regret because I was so immature and I said some things that came off to be very selfish and egotistical, but it was really so far. I was so upset that I got traded from Houston because I really thought I was never leaving Houston. I was sitting here, I'm looking at my numbers in Houston going, I'm underpaid and I'm going to stay here for all my life. And then Jerry Hunsicker walks down and says, hey, Drayton thinks we should trade you. He told me at the day before our last game against Chicago. So I'm like, oh, what? And I was just so crushed. I was so crushed. And so, I think those are the things that, you know, now I talk to guys that when I talk to pro guys, I sit there and go, listen, these are things you don't want to do. This is, and so, you know, I've learned a lot. I'm matured and that's why being a high school coach fits me because I can go, hey, I can show you how not to do a lot of these things. And so, and, you know, being a mentor means you've had to fail enough to learn to teach somebody how to do it the right way. And so, you know, I've been blessed with a lot of great people around me. I wouldn't even have a chance if it weren't for all you guys, even you, Blummer.
Hey, for a brief moment in time, it was a lot of fun playing behind you, dude.
I miss those days. And, you know, to have the opportunity to go back occasionally has been a lot of fun. Hopefully I'll get back down there. This whole COVID thing will get out of the way and I get back down there and spend more time.
Even you, Blummer. I like that comment.
Even you, Blummer. Man.
He did do that on purpose. I felt like that was
all
a slight.
All my friends say that. Even you, Blummer. I'm used to it.
So that's very telling. I mean, I love the fact that Billy Wagner just leaves it all out there. He doesn't shy away from, like, I want to be in the Hall of Fame. And he's not shy, and I love that.
He hasn't been shy about anything in his life.
Yeah, that's true.
I mean, you didn't have a chance to play with him. I was with him in 2002-03 when I was playing here, and can't remember. I think it was 2003 when we were going for the National League Central against the Cubs, and we were expecting a big move to be made at the trade deadline because we were just one arm away from actually solidifying a rotation and kind of moving forward. You know, that was the dawn of Octavio Dotel, Brad Lidge, and then Billy Wagner. I mean, we were starting to shut games down with big-time arms. And, you know, I think it was Randy Wolf we got, and Billy Wagner was like, I got something to say. He stood up and he said, that's kind of – what are we doing? He goes, we need to go out and get people. He's a guy, but we need big-time arms. And he wasn't afraid to say anything to Drayton. He wasn't afraid to say anything to the media. But those guys, those are the guys that hold you accountable and expect the most out of you in the clubhouse. And that's what I appreciated about Billy. And that's really what I learned the 2 years I was here with the Houston Astros to begin with.
Boy, he was something else. And a lot of times we talk about the eye test. And we just kind of knew it when we were playing. There's certain guys, and I honestly felt this, and I'm not just saying this because he was our guest or that we were talking to him. Billy Wagner was a Hall of Famer, man. That guy closed it out, and he was intimidating, and he was one of the 1% best that we've ever seen.
Absolutely. You know, I told you I had the luxury of playing behind Trevor Hoffman, and that was one guy that you knew when he came into the ball game, the game was over. And I'm with you. The first 3 years I was in the big leagues having to face those guys,
that's
where that fear was instilled. But playing behind them, you started to understand a little bit more on how the process kind of came about and why they were so good.
Well, don't forget, you can see this on Astros YouTube channel. That'll be on there in its entirety. That was Billy Wagner. A lot of great stuff. We got one more little tiny segment left on this Astro Line. It's brought to you by Carbach Brewing Company. We're at Plucker's Wing Bar, 1400 North Shepherd. We'll be back with the last segment right after this.
Baseball season, it comes and goes, but Crawford Bach just flows and flows. It's the Bach to drink any time of year. You don't need a reason because it's a dang good beer. You can rock the Bach at a music festival or rodeo, Shakespeare in the Park or Lowrider Car Show. It's the Bach for bonfires and happy hour, South Padre, even your next baby shower. So share a Crawford Bach anytime with your favorite gals and bros. And when baseball season comes back, let's go Stros!
Discover the Palm Beaches. Experience legendary hospitality in Florida's Gulf capital with special rates at the area's best resorts. Miles of uncrowded beaches stretch from Jupiter to Boca Raton. Small cities and beach towns are waiting for you to explore. More than 160 sun-soaked golf courses are inviting you to play. Start planning your next trip at thepalmbeaches.com.
Yeah, welcome back to the last segment of Astro Line. Of course, that's presented by Carbach Brewing Company. We're at Plucker's Wing Bar at 1400 North Shepherd. Steve Sparks with Jeff Blum. And we just got a few seconds here. We want to thank our engineers, Matt Bolts and Joe George, who did such a great job. Don't forget, next Astro Line is next Thursday, and that's going to be Blummer with Robert Ford. So look forward to that. Was that 40 or 50 wings you just scarfed down, Blummer? That is so not intelligible that it just sounds exactly like one of your broadcasts with TK.
Hey.
Very good. All right, 35 seconds left in the show. What'd you take away from Billy Wagner?
Yep.
That's great stuff. Thanks for opening up, Blummer. Hey, next week is going to be great as we march forward. James Click has been doing such a great job of filling out this bullpen right now. We've got our fingers crossed that we're going to start seeing a couple more signings in the next week or two. So hopefully we'll have a little bit more information. For Jeff Blum, I'm Steve Sparks. You're listening to Astro Line. That was presented by Carbach Brewing Company.